Chapter 10. Celine. Wake up early if you want another man's life or land. No lamb for the lazy wolf, no battles won in bed. Kenneth closed the book and stared at the old worn leather cover. From the words of Odin, the High One, he read out loud with a snicker. Yeah, right. He tossed the book onto the couch and leaned back, staring at the ceiling. Being at the Brotherhood headquarters in San Diego brought back memories from his early years. He remembered sitting in this very same office, strenuously working day and night while going over documents sent by researchers from the western part of America. He worked closely with Mr. Austin, verifying specific details and recommending what actions the Brotherhood needed to take next. He spent hours peering outside the office window, watching the sunset, and dreaming about the day when he would become president of the Midwest Division. Now the office he sat in felt small in comparison to his own back in Minneapolis. But he assumed that, because of his status, he would never have to sit in a small office again. Mr. Austin's offices in both cities were cozy and spacious. Lavishly decorated, they contained artifacts from around America and the world. He wanted an office just like the old man's office, located on the top floor. One day soon, not only did Kenneth want Mr. Austin's office, he still wanted the old man's position. Gaining the position meant moving the chapter back in the right direction, hoping the rest of the organization would follow. He vowed to stay far away from the squabble between Mr. Austin's dysfunctional daughter and the Brotherhood. In his current position as region leader, he had to not only deal with Veronica, but he was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, while training the 30 new and young researchers under his supervision to not do their rightful duties. He felt helpless, sitting here while waiting for Mr. Austin to show up. He also felt anxious, wanting to tell him about the information Celine wanted, and at the same time watching his plan in motion. Whatever the dark curse was, he wanted it and needed it to gain the upper hand. He heard a gentle knock on his door, and he looked up, seeing Joanne standing in the doorway. "I've arranged for our flight back to Minneapolis. We leave tomorrow morning." "Good." He smiled and motioned for her to come in. She pushed her glasses from the bridge of her nose and up to her face. She walked in, her head lowered, carrying a stack of papers in her hands. She set them on Kenneth's desk, and she stepped back. "This is the only information I could find that comes close to what you're looking for." Kenneth looked over the documents. Most of the information was blacked out, giving him nothing of importance. "And access to the archives?" She shook her head. "It was denied." "I'm not surprised." He huffed and pushed the documents away. "Do you think they have it, Kenneth?" she asked. He shrugged. "Celine seems to think so." "Maybe we should..." He raised his hand to interrupt. "That's all, Joanne. Thanks." She smiled briefly, then left the room. He drummed his fingers on his desk. He knew where she was going with the conversation. Since Celine walked into the Minneapolis chapter, she continuously grew nervous over what she wanted him to do. Several times, Joanne tried to persuade him to tell Mr. Austin about the visit, and each time he refused. He needed to find the clay tablet first to create necessary leverage, but finding it seemed harder than expected. When he first walked into the headquarters, he asked the few researchers who had the unlucky duty of working on the weekends about it, but no one knew what he spoke about. Before he left Minneapolis, he contacted the presidents of the West and East Division in the US to get access into the archives, only to be denied. Even if he told them everything, he knew how they'd react. All of them were selfish, pompous. They wouldn't move a muscle, thinking the Brotherhood had nothing to fear when it came to Demon. He heard an object hitting the floor just outside his office door. He stood up and straightened his jacket. He replayed the incoming conversation in his mind. "Feed Mr. Austin lies about the deal he made with Celine and plead to get access into the archives. The deal Mr. Austin made came with a price. Sure, Celine came through on her end, and the city of Minneapolis was no longer under Kai's shaky rule, However, freeing Lucius wasn't part of the deal, nor was the killing of many demon, not like he cared. He felt that Celine was in no position to ask or demand anything from him or the organization. His office door slowly opened. Three tall, muscular males dressed in black and wearing black trench coats walked in through the door. Behind them, standing in the doorway, Kenneth saw Mr. Austin, wearing a thick wool jacket and dark-rimmed glasses. Kenneth forced himself to smile and he stood up from his desk. Mr. Austin looked older than the last time he had seen him. He was slightly slumped over and his face was cut with flaccid wrinkles. He didn't acknowledge Kenneth's presence. Instead, he walked around the office and the bodyguards positioned themselves near the back. Mr. Austin rubbed his finger on the shelves of his bookcase and on top of a picture taken of downtown San Diego at night. Kenneth waited humbly, with his eyes alternating from Mr. Austin's bodyguards to Mr. Austin himself. He didn't want to speak first. Mr. Austin started their conversation with one word. "Celine," his voice cracked. Kenneth affirmed by nodding. "I believe we have a problem." Mr. Austin continued his examination of the bookcase. "How is Veronica?" "She's fine. She's still at Blind Bluff Manor. And my researchers have been keeping tabs on her." "Are they keeping their distance?" "Yes, sir, like you wanted." "Good." Mr. Austin walked over to the edge of the desk. He swiped his hand over its base and examined his palm for any dust. "The last thing I need to hear is that my baby girl is in danger." Kenneth maintained his composure. "And what of the demon?" "We've been reporting a decrease in their numbers and an increase of vampires in the city," Kenneth answered. "I don't care about the vampires." "Yes, I understand, sir." "What I do care about are the demon." Mr. Austin lowered himself slowly in the cushioned office chair. "Yes, sir, I understand." Kenneth sat across from him. "So, what of the demon?" Mr. Austin asked again. "Their numbers seem to be dwindling in the city. However, there have been reports of some moving into the city. My researchers can't pinpoint who they are, so we're trying to match their faces with any research documents we might have on record." Mr. Austin nodded. "I've received some information on the slight decrease from other cities throughout the US. An exodus, if you will. Apparently, Minneapolis isn't the only city experiencing this kind of incident." "Maybe not an exodus, sir," Kenneth replied. "Perhaps a migration elsewhere." "To where?" Mr. Austin reached into the inner pocket of his jacket and he pulled out a cigar. "Do you think they're just slithering back into their dens?" Kenneth didn't reply. "Of course not." Mr. Austin examined his cigar. "They're fleeing from someone or something. Now," he changed the subject. "You mentioned we have a problem?" Kenneth swallowed. Whatever he said next to Mr. Austin about Celine had to be precise. He didn't want to make him feel that he made the mistake of trusting her, even though he strongly believed that the old man did. "Celine stopped by the office. She told me that she requested an emergency meeting with you at the headquarters." He licked his lips. "With all due respect, sir, I don't trust her and neither should you." He watched as Mr. Austin pulled a small guillotine cigar cutter from his pocket. "I believe she has something planned. But what? I don't know." Lesson 1. Never trust a demon. Mr. Austin cut the end of his cigar, lit it, and took a couple of puffs before he replied, "Of course she has something planned." Kenneth never forgot that lesson. The Brotherhood made sure to embed it into the brains of new researchers in training. The plan was not to grow a long-lasting relation with her. It was only to make the Minneapolis environment more stable to get the chapter re-established in the city, Mr. Austin said. "A deal that apparently she doesn't care to keep." Kenneth knew that part of the plan, and he nodded. He didn't care if the demon burned themselves out of their sanctuaries, fighting against each other while Kai ran amok. Less demon equaled stability in his eyes. "The information I received involved Celine, Anastasia, and Lucius." Mr. Austin released the tart cigar smoke, and it circled in the air above him. I've had your researchers track Anastasia's movements through the city, and I've had other researchers from different cities track her as well. Wait, Kenneth thought for a moment. You had my researchers secretly track her? The news came as a shock to him. Under my own nose? Mr. Austin nodded. Yes. You said you wanted my researchers to stay away and focus on your daughter. Mr. Austin stared at the white, billowing cigar smoke in the air. Let's get one thing straight. I am the president of the Midwest Division. You are just a region leader under my command. Your researchers are my researchers. Do you understand? Kenneth felt his blood beginning to boil underneath his skin. My father was once president, too. His hands formed into solid fists, and he dug his nails into his palms, feeling heavy stings. He now believed Mr. Austin had lost his mind. What he did was unfathomable. Yes, I understand, sir. Mr. Austin puffed from his cigar again. This time he held the smoke longer. You put in a request to gain access to the archives, correct? Yes, I did. Your request is denied. Yes, I know, but why? Kenneth jumped to his feet. Sir, Celine showed up at the chapter, asking about a missing tablet. I have to see why this object is so important to her and Lucius. You should have come to me, especially when it involved the Dark Curse. Kenneth scrunched his lips together. Mr. Austin paused and his eyes moved from left to right. He then released the smoke from his mouth in tiny puffs. You've never been that great of a liar. Sir? Mr. Austin dropped his cigar to the floor. One of his bodyguards proceeded to stomp on it, extinguishing it. Kenneth, you are to remain here until further notice. I don't understand. Mr. Austin gripped his cane and raised himself to his feet. From here on out, you are temporarily relieved of your duties as a region leader until further notice. Confused, Kenneth stuttered his reply. Re-relieved? Yes, relieved. I have chosen your assistant, Joanne, to take your place until my decision is reviewed and approved by the headmaster. It was the first time Kenneth witnessed Mr. Austin's stern demeanor, and he wanted to take the nearest weapon he could find and bash in his head. Being relieved was just as bad as being shunned from the Brotherhood forever, and the old man knew that. His decision ruined any chances of Kenneth being promoted in the future. Plus, choosing his assistant Joanne to take his place was a slap in the face. Kenneth needed to know why the Dark Curse had everyone, including Mr. Austin, taking cautious measures. He refused to let the old man's decision step in the way of his plan. He had to go. May I ask why I'm being relieved instead of reprimanded? Kenneth asked. Mr. Austin pulled his cell phone from his pocket. Your actions, Kenneth. Actions meant more than going over Mr. Austin's head, ignoring the chain of command. Kenneth watched Mr. Austin dial a number on his phone and place it up to his ear, realizing that he called the Minneapolis chapter to inform them of the change. Once he finished, Kenneth expected his bodyguards to escort him from the office to the opposite side of the building where relieved Brotherhood members went. The area, the holding cells, were nothing more than a penitentiary, where they took researchers who betrayed the organization. There, he had to wait until they decided his fate. There wouldn't be any trials and jury. He wouldn't be judged by his peers. Best case scenario, the organization would ostracize and kick him out forever. Worst case scenario, they would keep him and question him through various means, one being torture. It wasn't something the Brotherhood did frequently this day and age. In the past, if they wanted to rid themselves of a member, they called in their mercenaries to do the dirty work. I know you don't have to tell me, but I'd like to know what we're dealing with when it comes to this tablet. Kenneth waited for Mr. Austin, but he didn't answer. I have the right to know. Mr. Austin remained quiet, listening to his cell phone. They heard a loud rumble just outside the office, followed by Joanne screaming. Kenneth quickly rushed to the door and opened it slightly. He saw Joanne hunkered underneath an office desk. Floating papers littered the air, and the lights above began to flicker. He heard more commotion to his right, just outside two double doors, which led to the main elevators. "Joanne, what's going on?" Kenneth whispered to her. She shrugged her shoulders. Her mouth trembled as she spoke. "All I saw was a blur and people flying through the air." "Close the door," Mr. Austin ordered. Kenneth closed the door and locked it. Mr. Austin slowly lowered his phone. "It's Celine." His bodyguards drew in close to Mr. Austin. They all pulled out sharp wooden stakes from underneath their dark trench coats. It couldn't be possible. Demon breaking into Brotherhood headquarters had happened several times in the past, the most recent being in Chicago, decades ago. Since then, the organization prepared itself in case it happened again. A computerized female voice came over the loudspeaker. "Code 3. Code 3. All available personnel, head to the armory immediately." At first, Kenneth couldn't recall the distress codes he'd learned as a student when growing up within the Brotherhood. He was an A student who excelled in every subject from the history of the demon to how to kill one. Code 1. Warning. Prepare for possible attack. Code 2. Threat imminent. Code 3. Intruder. The screams grew louder, and he cautiously stepped toward the glass window. He pulled back the blinds, just in time to see blood splatter on the outside window. He stepped back, feeling his body beginning to shut down, his feet glued to the floor in fright. "Where are your stakes?" Mr. Austin whispered to him. He reached for the stake he'd always carried with him in his pocket, but he paused, then pointed to his desk. Top drawer to the right. If it was Celine, he needed to protect himself. Who was he fooling? Celine was fast enough to take him, Mr. Austin, and his bodyguards out in one swoop without breaking a sweat. It was every man for himself, but she wouldn't kill him because she needed to get the missing piece. That was the only reason she came back to the headquarters. Before Mr. Austin moved, the office door blew open and a gust of wind engulfed them. A bloodied Celine stood in the doorway, gripping Joanne by the arm. Her natural reddish hair covered the left side of her face while blood covered her right hand. Her tenebrous eyes changed back to a natural green color while they inspected the bodyguards, Mr. Austin, and eventually Kenneth. "Sorry for the intrusion, but I couldn't resist." She swiped the blood-covered strands of her hair back, finally revealing her whole face. Mr. Austin reached to pull open the top desk drawer, but she stopped him by clearing her throat. "Think twice before you reach for your stake," she said in a calm voice. Mr. Austin stopped. The voice over the loud speaker continued. "Code 3. Code 3. Kenneth watched in shock while Celine caressed Joanne's cheek. He saw it in her dancing green eyes that she wanted to kill her. At that moment, he opened his mind and he let Celine take advantage of his invitation. Kill her. A devilish smile appeared on Celine's face. She gripped Joanne firmly by the neck. Joanne whimpered for Celine to spare her. "Celine, don't hurt her," Kenneth said, hoping Celine would catch on to his concocted plot. She did. "But it's what we demon do. She's family, please. Give me a good reason to spare her and I will." Kenneth continued to stare at her. "Kill that bitch now." In a flash, Celine snapped Joanne's neck and pushed the body to the floor. Mr. Austin's bodyguards moved in, but she moved quickly. She snapped the neck of the first bodyguard who approached her. The second bodyguard ran at her with his stake raised in the air. She caught him by the wrist, yanked the stake from his hand, and embedded it in his throat. The third bodyguard didn't have time to attack. Celine struck him in his chest with her fist, breaking through skin and his ribcage, and exiting through his back. Kenneth and Mr. Austin watched the bodyguard's body slump to the floor. Celine wiped her hands as if she had just touched a dirty object. "Now, since I have you two alone." Mr. Austin made his move again, reaching for the stakes, but Celine moved in a white blur. She now stood next to him and she pushed him down in the leather chair. She leaned over Mr. Austin, close enough that her lips slightly touched the side of his cheek when she spoke. "Kenneth, call the front desk and tell them to turn off the loudspeaker or I will kill him." Kenneth didn't want to move. He wanted Celine to snap the old man's neck. He stared at Joanne's lifeless body lying on the ground with her empty eyes staring into thin air. He didn't know what Celine planned to do, whatever it was. He hoped to not be on her to-kill list. He felt a quick pressure in his thoughts, followed by Celine's voice. Do it. Kenneth blocked his thoughts, gained his composure, picked up the phone, and dialed the front desk. This is Kenneth Dearhorn. Code override 6624. Stand down. I repeat, this is Kenneth Dearhorn. Code override 6624. Stand down. He then hung up the phone. Celine backed away from Mr. Austin, and she positioned herself on the edge of the desk. Looks like I got here just in the nick of time. He walked around the desk. We don't know what you're talking about. I just saved your career in the Brotherhood, she replied as she smiled, her teeth stained with blood. Kenneth could only imagine how many researchers and humans she killed on her way to his office. He pointed to the carnage outside of his office. Did you have to do that? Yes, I did, she replied. But he's still alive. She pressed her finger into Mr. Austin's chest. He's going to help you look for my missing piece. Kenneth turned to Mr. Austin, trying to see if his facial expression could confirm her accusation. But the old man didn't make any eye contact. Instead, he didn't take his eyes off the demon who stood over him. You know, if you harm Mr. Austin, the Brotherhood will retaliate. Kenneth raised his voice. I'm counting on it. She playfully patted Mr. Austin's head. Kenneth didn't entirely trust her, and he had every reason not to. From the files the Brotherhood collected on Celine throughout the centuries, they knew her as the demon who killed human and her own alike, especially if they stood in her way. Killing became second nature to her. She spread her hands over the surface of his desk, feeding off whatever psychic imprint she could pick up with her fingers. You should stop smoking, she said to Mr. Austin. Those cigars have a tart taste. What do you want? Mr. Austin asked. You know what I want. You researchers have a piece of the Dark Curse tablet. That tablet was destroyed centuries ago, he replied. You're lying again. She drummed her fingers on the surface of the desk. I can tell by your heartbeat. Mr. Austin clenched his teeth. Even if we knew where the piece was, I wouldn't tell you. She flicked her carrot hair back over her shoulder. Well, there's one way to find out. She raised her arm and her hands formed into a solid fist. Quickly, she struck him across the face and his body fell out of the chair and onto the floor. Kenneth kneeled next to Mr. Austin. You killed him. He checked his pulse, finding it still there. He stood up. Why didn't you kill him? Please, you're an idiot if you think I'd let him get off that easily. She grabbed Mr. Austin by the arm. Then again, you are an idiot. She began to drag him out of the office. Kenneth balled up his fist. He wanted to reach for the stake in his pocket. I knew I couldn't trust you. Celine chuckled. You can thank me later for saving your career. She opened the door of the office. Why do you want this tablet? Kenneth pressed the down button for the elevator. He glanced around the annihilated environment that resembled little of a work area. Body parts lay strewn across the floor and the work desks. Once brown, the carpet soaked up the blood of his co-workers. He placed his hand over the pocket of his jeans, checking the spare stake, still hidden. Just find the piece I need, she answered. What if Mr. Austin told you was the truth? What if we don't have it? Then you're no use to me. Kenneth's suspicions grew. What? You're just going to kill everyone here? Maybe just Veronica's father. I haven't decided yet. She then retorted. You do want me to kill him eventually, right? The elevator door opened. Your talents are wasted here. You would make a great minion. She lifted Mr. Austin's body over her shoulder. You should be happy that I chose you instead of killing you. Happy? Kenneth smirked. Your type doesn't know the meaning of the word. The elevator doors closed. While they descended to the basement of the building, he closed his eyes. He had to think. Why was this tablet so important for Celine to enter the Brotherhood? and kill everyone in her way. She knew the Brotherhood would retaliate, even at the cost of Mr. Austin's life. She caught onto his thoughts. "I've told you before, don't worry about why the tablet is important to me." He straightened his shoulders and he stood tall. "Excuse me for being curious. I mean, you came all the way out here to San Diego, to Brotherhood headquarters, risking your life for it. Must be of some importance." She turned to look at him. Her eyes turned dark, and she glazed her pink tongue over her teeth. "Something like that." Her actions continued to baffle him, but he stopped thinking about it. For now, he knew he had to play along. "When any living creature has a strong desire, they do whatever they can do to obtain it as long as they don't sacrifice themselves in return. Humans are good at it, while demons struggle with the sense of self-preservation or annihilation." She dropped Mr. Austin's body to the floor. "You have that desire. I sensed it from you before I even met you. You will do whatever it takes to become president of the Midwest Division." She moved her hand toward his cheek, but he grabbed her by the wrist. "I can break into the Brotherhood, as you see, but I can't get into the archives. You can." She reached for his face again, and he immediately grabbed his spare stake. He moved it upward as she moved in. "My request to get in was denied." He eyed her closely. "Yes, and that's why I haven't killed Mr. Austin yet." She paused, feeling a sharp pinch in her chest. She looked down, glaring at the stake Kenneth held in his left hand. "Can never be too careful," he whispered. "You know I could kill you before you have the chance to strike." She moved back. "But I need you to get in." "He still dies," Kenneth pointed to Mr. Austin. "But only after I give you what you want. The Brotherhood needs to know he's still alive. We have to play this card as straight as possible." "Sure, but only if you get what I want." She then pulled back. "I'll choke you with your own entrails if you ever raise your stake to me again." He dropped the stake and it hit the floor in a dull thud. "I'll get you that piece." Celine's eyes narrowed. "You better, researcher." The elevator reached the basement floor and the door slowly opened. In front of them, several mercenaries, all dressed in black, stood a few feet away in front of a huge steel door, armed with stakes and machine guns. "Lucius hates waiting as much as I do." Celine grabbed Mr. Austin's arm and dragged him out of the elevator. She took a few steps before dropping his arm and placed her hands on her hips. He hesitated to leave the elevator, but he had to show the mercenaries standing guard that he wasn't the perpetrator, but also a victim. He finally stepped out and dropped to his knees, lowering his head in premeditated fear. "If you pathetic humans want to see him unharmed, then I suggest you lower your stakes," Celine threatened. Kenneth had been down to the lower level before, but he didn't remember seeing the steel doors. To the right of them, he saw a small hand placement pad for fingerprint identification. He grew curious on what the archives looked like. Now he had the chance to find out. He spoke. "Please, stand down. She will kill Mr. Austin." The researchers lingered in their movements. He heard a distant thud of a stake hitting the ground. Soon they all followed suit, and they dropped their weapons. Celine took hold of Mr. Austin's arm again, and she dragged his body up to the door with Kenneth in tow. When they approached the door, Kenneth watched her place her hand on the steel door, feeling its smooth texture. "What I want is located behind these doors." She looked over her shoulder at Kenneth and the researchers. "You all have 4 days to find the tablet piece your ancestors stole from us years ago." She placed Mr. Austin's hand up to the pad. The pad emitted a red line that moved right to left, then left to right. There was a large beep, followed by the sound of the metal door unlocking. Celine dropped Mr. Austin's body, and she used her demon's strength to push open the doors, revealing a lower level surrounded by thick walls of concrete that rivaled anything Kenneth had ever seen. Kenneth eyed the multiple rows of books, placed only a few feet apart from each other. They were filled to the brim in huge, leather-bound books. In the far back, in a glass case, were large vases, metallic weapons, and portraits. He stepped forward, letting the damp air infiltrate his nostrils, No one had been down here in a long time. If I were you, I'd get started. Celine folded her hands across her chest. Kenneth turned to her, his eyes bulging. I don't even know where to start. His eyes investigated the area. 4 days, Kenneth. Celine let out a quick smile and she knelt down, gripping Mr. Austin's right hand. And if any of you are thinking of a rescue, this should persuade you not to. Her eyes turned completely dark again, and in an instant she used her demon strength, pulled at Mr. Austin's right hand, and separated it from his body by the wrist. Blood splattered on Kenneth's face and chest, and he turned away. He convulsed, but held in his bile. He heard the mercenaries gasp around him. Celine handed the severed hand to Kenneth, and she grabbed Mr. Austin again by his incapacitated arm, heading for the elevator. If any of you attempt to follow me, he dies. She walked to the elevator and spoke again. You're going to need his hand to get back in, so you might want to bag that and put it on ice. Kenneth stood up and he closely watched her. Before the elevator doors closed, he opened his mind to communicate with her. I will get you the piece in 4 days, Celine smiled. Then you can kill him. She nodded as the elevator doors closed.
Craving more dark supernatural fiction? Unlock early access to narrated chapters, exclusive lore, and behind-the-scenes secrets from the Demon Chronicles. Only on Patreon. Join the darkness now at patreon.com/IsaianMorrison.